What's good? What's good? I'm back. We're going to make this part two of the TC Topkins interview. We had a little bit of issues, but we're going to take what we had before, and we're definitely going to keep it because there's a lot of great info, a lot of good jewels on there. We don't want to waste any of that info. So let's bring them back in. And here we go. TC.
Much better.
Okay. I think where we left off, we were talking about how oversaturated the music business is with the internet.
Yeah, we were just discussing that how kids think nowadays, since the streaming and social media and all these other things, there are tons of other avenues for you to get exposure. But because there are tons of other avenues, it's very difficult to get anybody's attention than it was before. You had a key element before that you could get everybody's attention on. That's not present anymore. Plus, since it is so easy to release music now, so I think Spotify some gets something like 6,000 releases a week.
It's 100,000 a day now. 100,000 a day now.
100,000 releases a day.
It was 60,000, and then they said they reached 100,000 in one day. I don't know if it stated that, but that's too much music.
Too much. Even if it's 30, I mean, it's too much.
Yeah,
I remember when we were complaining about 8 to 10 releases a week, you know. And matter of fact, when I was at CBS Epic, I cut back the amount of releases that we used to have because that was one of the main reasons that we were able to become successful, so we could concentrate more on our major releases other than trying to do so many different projects and schedule them and all that. You just cannot win with that much music on there.
And it seems like it makes it harder for it to be timeless or classic. Like a cat like NBA YoungBoy, yeah, he's number two behind Drake, but are we really going to remember all these songs 10 years from now?
Well, most of his stuff, though, is underground. He's big underground, but he's not as big as Drake on commercial releases and things of that nature. That is a good thing that they haven't, you know. I mean, underground was around back when I first started, when they used to have NWA and all that stuff that they couldn't air on radio. There was always an underground for material. But I would suggest nowadays, if any artist is trying to do anything as far as releasing, you need guidance and you need a professional to help you, because it's as easy as they say it is nowadays, it is much more difficult now than it was back in the 80s and 90s and stuff like that. It's just more competition, more avenues for entertainment. Shit, you got 500 channels on TV. You got, 500 different streaming outlets. So it's just very difficult. And I found out a lot of places that, man, that what they call the old school method of going to radio and going in those markets and performing works better. Works just as good as all of the other stuff. You don't capture as a larger audience as you would on the internet, but they are much more personally involved with your material once they see you perform and have some kind of interaction with you, you know.
You said something that caught my attention, NWA being underground. That was because they were making gangster music, right? So right. They considered underground anything that wasn't, couldn't play on radio.
Yeah.
Nowadays, underground is typically a sound.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Not necessarily profanity or things of that nature like it was in NWA days.
Yeah. Radio and street teams, did they always go hand in hand?
Yep, absolutely. I still use street teams. You especially need them in major markets like Houston, Atlanta, New York, things on that nature, where clubs have an impact. And in a lot of cities, man, you would be shocked the how much impact strip clubs and clubs have on music. Matter of fact, it's almost as expensive to work the strip clubs in Atlanta, Georgia, as it is to get radio airplay.
Wow. Now, do you think you think strip clubs and venues are like more valuable now than radio nowadays?
I don't think there's more valuable, but there is a niche for it. There's a niche. There. Strip clubs wasn't as popular back when I was coming up.
Okay.
Strip clubs, it's like a lifestyle now. You know, I mean, they have big parties at strip clubs. I mean, they're much more acceptable
than yeah.
back when in the 70s and the 80s and things of that nature. And it is, I have known music to develop from strip clubs.
Put it in your mouth.
Yeah.
Acanelli.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Come up from strip clubs. Yeah.
Do you think COVID's had any effect on the street teams?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, COVID has had an effect on everything, man. Should I almost starve for a year? but nobody releasing any music.
You know? Yeah.
And matter of fact, I had a couple of good, excellent projects that we were doing and were about to go out on tour with this artist when they stopped everything. And it just killed the record. It killed the record because we were at a point, it was an R&B record, because you don't really necessarily need to tour as much on hip-hop as you do on R&B.
Okay.
Because R&B just does not get the kind of action on the internet that hip-hop does.
Yeah.
You could have a huge R&B record and have shit hardly any followers on social media because of the demographics and the age group.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I had a record on a boy named George Tandy. I think you helped me work.
Yeah, I was looking it up. George, yeah.
Yeah. Went top three in the country. I don't think he had no more than maybe 15, 20,000 followers. You know, that's unheard of. Record companies don't even want to talk to you if you ain't got
no followers.
Yeah, you ain't got 200,000 to 300,000 followers, man. They don't want to talk to you.
But it's
ridiculous.
Yeah. Because I've seen the exact opposite. There's an artist we're working. She's got like, I don't want to say her name or nothing, but she's got like 1 million subscribers on YouTube and 1 million Twitter followers. And I'm like, well, why are you having to pay me if you got all these subscribers and all these followers? You're not working your music right with these platforms. Yeah, what's going on?
It does not. And as I found this out. I worked with the artist in here. Beautiful girl. Had, I think, about 2 million followers. Okay. Yo, the whole nine yards, and it just did not click with her followers. I don't know if it was the style of music. Tons of radio airplay on it. Got it on MTV, got it on BET, the whole nine yards, nothing. And she had the package, the whole package, the looks, the followers, you know, the whole nine. It just did not connect.
Yeah, it didn't resonate with the followers.
Yeah, it just did not. I mean, we got plenty of comments on the video. We got plenty of action at radio. But for the markets that I had, because I had New York, Chicago, D.C., Atlanta, had L.A., I had tons of major markets on this project. It just did not develop. I've had two or three projects like that. And all female artists that had major followers, but it basically come down. Matter of fact, I try to tell anybody this. I don't care how big you are on social media, if you got 5 million followers, if that music ain't in the box, in the pocket, man, it just don't matter. It really don't matter because they just will not buy garbage or buy your garbage. Matter of fact, they'll comment on it and tell you how bad it is. You know, I've had a lot. Now, you'll get a lot of reaction on that. If you don't get anything from the internet, you'll get negativity.
I want to get into the book.
Mm-hmm.
Start with the title, When Radio is King. Is radio still king, you think, because it's less oversaturated?
No.
It's not? Radio, you don't think it's...
Radio's purpose is not music anymore.
It's not music. It's just advertising.
No, it's advertising, programming. Radio plays a little bit safe now. They want all records researched. All records, you know. Most of, matter of fact, Houston, you can't get a record in Houston, Texas, man, unless the program director happens to like the local, a local artist or something, or it's a national record. You, matter of fact, I've had records that are top 20 nationally, the Houston play. You know, I mean, and this market, man, I used to love Houston because they would take risk. The program directors would take risk. Program directors nowadays don't take risks. Don't take that many risks or step out on something they believe in. You know, I've been able, matter of fact, I was just telling you, or I don't know if I was just telling this, about Maze. When I took when Maze first came out, I took it straight to the radio station. They put it right on. Program director did not have to clear it with anyone or anything of that nature. Because see, you got, in every corporation now, you got layers of people that have something to do with music. A lot of the program directors that I really like dealing with, you got consultants, you know? And the consultants don't have nothing to do with the radio or in the market or anything else. It's just that you have to get your record cleared through them before the station can play it.
You think there's too many people in the music business or in radio that just don't understand music in general?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. When I was first starting in the industry and working in the industry, radio and music was like this. You know, I mean, it was, they were a part of each other. It was like one arm and another arm on one body. Because radio back then really depended upon new, matter of fact, stations used to fight over who played records first. You know what I mean? They wanted first in the marketplace to play that music. They took pride in being able to say, we were the first station in the country to play so-and-so and so-and-so. That's gone. There's no competition for that type of activity anymore. They want to make sure that what they play is safe, that you do not hit that button and change the dial. They want to play something continuously recognizable. You know, an artist that you recognize. You have, that's why name acts, you know, as long as you have a name act that gets the daytime and that sort of stuff, that makes it easier for a program director because they don't have to worry about you switching to another station because they're going to continue to play the records that have already been proven to be a hit. And that's what radio is now. They want to play proven hits.
Same thing with the labels, right? They just want proven artists.
Proven artists, baby. Yeah. And you will notice, which I'm hurting from now, is labels have cut back on releases.
Yeah. I had a lot of more label budgets like a couple years ago than I think I got towards the end of last year. And the beginning of this year, they've really been slow on the label budgets.
They're really slow. I've only worked independent stuff since beginning of the year. No major material, no major artists. And I had a couple of friends of mine that are VPs of record labels that said they're making so much money off a catalog. They don't need new releases as much as they did before. Because with the convenience of streaming, every age group can find what they want to hear. That's why they don't listen to radio anymore. You know, I'm 75, 76 years old. I keep saying I'm 75. So 76 years old. I listen to Luther, Teddy Pendergrass, you know, OJs, Patti LaBelle. You know, I still got some Drake and some other stuff that I really like, but 95% of the material that I listen to is material I'm familiar with. I don't get a chance. I hear new artists every now and then unless I'm working with them, but it's so convenient now to have the stuff that you want to hear. Like, matter of fact, like this morning, I took my daughter to have a procedure this morning. She had a little something wrong with one of her eyes, so she had a little procedure. And when we were on our way to the hospital, she took out her phone and hooked in Spotify and started playing this stuff. She started playing some stuff. Oh, Tupac, Biggie, nobody that's current.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's 40-some years old because she's playing the stuff that she grew up on.
Yeah, that's my age group, and that's what definitely what we grew up on. Yeah.
New material has a hard way of breaking through.
I think it does too, because not too much of this new material I look at as classic or timeless, like a lot of the artists you named.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? I hate to be like this. I just don't feel like artists put enough work into their material.
Brush them out.
They figure if they got a hook, you know, that's all they need is a hook and a beat. But I mean, stuff that lasts, man, has much more depth than that.
And you could tell when you hear it.
I know when I hear a hit record, and I know when it's going to be, when it's not hollow, when it's not shallow, when the material has body and has substance to it, you know. I love working with artists like that, man. Love working with artists like that. It's just that they are very, very few and far between nowadays, you know.
Why'd you write this book?
People worrying the shit out of me to do it. And then on top of it, Paul, as quiet as it's kept, and excuse my French, motherfuckers just start taking credit for shit I did. I couldn't understand it. I never understood, you know, why somebody would want to take credit for something they didn't do. I had a friend of mine who did an article on me. I see this article's up here on the wall. This had to be 10 years ago. He did an article on me about 10 years ago about my time with Michael and Sade. And the artist that they all try to steal is Sade.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to say that they're the ones that discovered Sade and brought her to America, which is a lie. It was little old me, you know. That's the artist that I have the most problem with people trying to steal my credit for. Now, the Thriller stuff and Michael stuff is all over the internet that I work with Michael. But you can't find nothing on the internet about me and Sade because several major vice presidents at Epic and other labels.
They took the credit.
Took the credit for it. Yeah. Matter of fact, it's in the book. I call him out. You know, I call him out. And I say, you know, you didn't have a damn thing to do with this record. Matter of fact, as quiet as that is kept, as everybody will find out when the book came out, man, Epic didn't have a clue of what to do with that girl. They did not want to release that record because they saw her as an overrated jazz artist from Europe. That's what they saw her at.
Yeah.
I never heard her music like that. I never thought of it as jazz or anything of that nature. I just thought it was a new style of where, you know, she styles her music like Chaka Khan styles her, you know. Chaka Khan had a hell of a vocalist, but Chaka has a style that nobody else can copy. When you hear a Chaka Khan record, you know that's Chaka Khan. You know, same thing with Sade. When you hear Sade, you know that's her. You know, so she had her own signature style. And when you have your own signature style, it's always harder to break. It's always tougher to break. Whenever you're an original with something original that is unique, people are slow to accept it.
How hard is it to break a European artist in an American market?
You got to have a slick plan. Let me tell you that.
It seems like America, we just don't want to support overseas artists as much as they support us.
Oh, now they love American music.
They love American music.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I got most interviews scheduled for Europe than I do states. As soon as they heard about this book coming out, over in Europe, Sade is like a goddess.
Yeah.
And none of them knew about me and Sade. But I guarantee you when this book comes out, Sade is definitely going to say something because she's definitely in it. And the fact that we sat on that album for months. They didn't know what to do with it, you know. But European, that was a period in the 80s. European acts were really big. They had the Clash, they had Culture Club, Adamant. We had a ton of acts coming over from Europe that was happening in England, English acts. You know, and that was the only acts that were getting access to MTV back then.
Is the Europeans?
The European acts and rock and roll. They weren't playing any black artists.
Let's get into that. I want to get into that. Mm-hmm. Breaking early black artists. I'm glad you brought that up. What was it like? I've heard it was like almost like they used to work with mob cats. Oh, yeah. And mob cats will be like, give you two options. You break the record and take the money, break the record, or we break your legs. Was there any validity to that?
That was an element of that in the business.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a major element, especially with black labels.
Yeah.
Because when I worked with Stax, man, there was nobody over there at Stax that had a college degree. It wasn't like we were no rocket scientists over there. And there were several guys in the company that were straight up gangster. Now, I mean, matter of fact, they were straight up gangster even when I was at CBS.
Yeah.
The element was still there in the 80s, man. You know? It was I'm sure it's still an element in the business. You know, it's too much money in the business for not to have that element. Whenever there's a lot of money involved, you're going to find some type of mafia or some kind of syndicate or crooks involved in it. Ain't no way. It's just no way.
And payola, has it always been part of radio since day one?
Always. And I had a partner by tell me this. The boy that was vice president of Motown. He told me this. He said, I don't care what they do or what they tell you. They'll never get rid of payola. And that was in 1971, I think, when he told me that. Okay.
And wasn't even thought of yet.
And he's still alive and well.
And I would say it's even worse in Spotify.
Oh, man, you know what? That streaming shit ain't nothing but a hook. That ain't nothing but a hook. Yeah, you know, they're thinking that they're going to have a method of actually counting streams and all that. All of it's hooked, man. All of it's hooked. Anybody that wants a million streams, you can get them. You can get them. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's as a matter of fact, it's more corrupt than any other element in the business. I don't know why they still have streaming.
Like, if we used to break down a percentage of payola in radio, what would you say? Like 50-50, 60-40?
What do you mean as far as what I mean?
Like, how many people's doing it?
Oh, everybody do it.
In radio?
Not every station. No, now all stations don't participate. Some guys I know wouldn't dream of taking money.
You got every Spotify playlist is charging.
Huh?
Almost every Spotify playlister is charging.
Oh yeah. Now Spotify is corrupt. All of them are corrupt. Spotify more than most of them.
And I don't so much blame the independent artists. I mean, not the independent artists or the independent playlisters, because Spotify is like FM radio right now.
Spotify, everybody thinks that they can happen just by getting on Spotify.
Yeah.
And up on Spotify. It ain't that kind of party.
They're not looking to break nobody new. Not even from day one. I mean, you know, like you said, early radio was, they were looking, fighting to be the first person to break somebody. Spotify has never had that mentality. Like, we want to be the first to break somebody.
Spotify, you got to pay for features. You got to pay for everything. And then they got farms, man, up in New York and everywhere, man. That's all they do is do stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's all they
do. The stream farms.
Yeah, stream farms are everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know how much it really doesn't matter to Spotify though, because they got their subscribers paying for it.
Yeah.
And the label's loving it.
Labels are loving it.
They're sitting there, they're making tons of money off of no effort. That's why it has started killing new music. It's really starting to bear on new music. When is the last time you've ever seen I heard anything new music that everybody was talking about excited? I can't remember one. Only thing you hear about now is Taylor Swift, Beyonce, Lady Gaga, Drake, Jay-Z. You don't hear about any new artists breaking. I think the last big new artists that I can remember breaking through was what? Justin Bieber.
You're right. Like, there's no album out that comes out that I'm just like, oh, I gotta go hear that.
No, ain't nothing like that. Matter of fact, the last Beyonce album was very disappointing to me. She said she was doing it for the gays. I'm happy for them, you know. But you know, the funny thing about it, Freddie Ryan, I was talking about this. Beyonce's never won album or record of the year. She's never had a record that has been voted by the Grammys as being the best record of the year.
Dang.
That don't say too much to me.
What's your take on the censorship going on? You think it's going to leak over into the music heavier?
No. They're not worried about the music. They're worried about education.
What about certain individuals? Like, I've heard through the grapevine that people told me to try to put out content with like Kanye West music in it or something, and this people tell them they got to remove the music before they can release the content. And it's cleared and everything. They just don't want the music. They want to kind of like censor the music, Kanye's music out. You don't think if more individuals start taking those kind of stances?
Kanye may have talked himself in a hole.
Okay. You think so?
Yeah, he may have talked himself in a hole. I don't think they're going
to. You don't think it'll leak over at all?
I don't think they're going to take their foot off his neck. I really don't.
I hope it's just Kanye, because like Luther Campbell fought so hard, you know, in the Supreme Court for this.
There's not as much filth in music anymore other than the N-word. They're just rapping the motherfucker and the N-word.
Yeah.
The only thing that everybody using now. You know, back in the early days, they were talking about shooting and killing people and killing cops, and that's what they were concerned about.
Yeah, like you talking about NWA, like fuck the police and cop killer Ice-T.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and I really think the music was more real back then because they were really talking about content that they was real and could identify with them. You know, we don't have. When's the last time you had a hit record over something political? What was that?
Maybe Kendrick Lamar or something.
Just Lamar, that's about it.
He's probably the most political mainstream rapper you could get, but he's just one of one. It ain't one. J. Cole's from my city, and he's not super political. He's just more, he's like a humble kind of backpackish rapper.
Nobody wants to carry that burden anymore. You know, it's like kryptonite now, man. I mean, it's gotten so anything that you said been taken out of content.
Right.
Yeah, it's been taken out of content, and it goes a lot further than, you know, you can't go into depth about anything without you really pissing a ton of people off. Opinions just piss people off nowadays.
That's the point I was about to get at. Nowadays, if you take a political stance, you're pretty much alienating half of your consumer base.
Because,
you know, we're in a country where it's like most people are either Democrats or Republicans, and it don't matter what stance you take, you're basically pissing off the other side.
You know what? I got a partner, man, that is very rich. Okay, so he's a Republican. He calls himself being liberal, but he's a Republican. Okay, all the way to the core. He was a Trump man, and it really shocked me that he voted for Trump, because I thought he was an intelligent, you know, but it was about the money. It's about the money. He's a multimillionaire, and he's about money, you know. But I had a discussion with him the other day, because I'm always fucking with him about how stupid some of the stupid shit they be doing. And he gets so enraged about it, you know. And I told him, I said, hey, man, I said, why are we sitting up here arguing about some bullshit that doesn't have any effect on any of our lives? They stealing all the money. And trust me, they stealing all the money.
Okay? Yeah.
And me and you with our broke ass, well, me with my broke ass, not you. But me with my broke, I don't have time to be concerned with that, man, because I know it's bullshit. Both sides are bullshitting people, especially the Republicans. Some of the shit that they be saying, I don't understand how people can go for that. You know, some of the stuff that they say, John, John Kennedy gonna come back from the dead and be the vice president for Trump. And I mean, some of the shit I be hearing. And you know, there were people actually in Dallas waiting for him to show up that day, man. The what is it? The Q crowd, the Q crowd, the people that had the QAnon or whatever they are.
Yeah,
it was out that John Kennedy, that airplane crash was a fake, that he's coming back, and he's going to take over the VP ship with Donald Trump when Trump gets back in the White House.
And I mean,
people actually went to Dallas, flew to Dallas for him to show up. It was hundreds of people down there.
Yeah. I could believe it, though. There's people that actually believe Tupac lives with his mom in Lumberton, North Carolina. She actually stays like 30 minutes down the road from us, and they think Tupac is like in a wheelchair living in her house right now.
Yeah, I don't know how long it went before they finally let Elvis Presley die. You know,
my mom loved that guy, and I couldn't stand Elvis.
They still probably have an Elvis Presley sighting somewhere. I would not be surprised. I don't know. You know what, Paulo? I think it is that the people that are in charge basically let education and knowledge in this country go to shit. Okay. You can walk up to any kid in school nowadays, almost, man, and ask them some of the simplest shit in the world. They can't answer.
No, I've seen the videos. They can't answer. They can't tell the difference between a state, a country, or a city, or a county.
They just don't have any knowledge of what's going on around them. And I think that's on purpose. I really do think that's on purpose. That they want the masses uneducated. They want the masses stupid.
Well, you can't control smart people.
No, you can't control a person that's got confusion.
Yeah.
But in this country, man, education is for the rich. Okay, and private schools, public schools are going to shit. Don't nobody care about public schools no more. If you poor going to public school, you're in trouble, player.
You know. Is there ever going to be a college course on how to break a record?
They've had them.
They got them.
Oh yeah, they got a school in Atlanta that they wanted me to teach with. I don't know if that's a subject, but they teach you about how the marketing and demographics and all of that kind of stuff, you know. And but you know, I like had OJT on the job training, okay, because you learn certain demographics, certain areas of the country respond to certain artists quicker than they do to other artists. And you learn what areas of the country that you should approach about dealing with certain acts and develop them here in certain areas of the country while you develop another artist in another area of the country and then try to build them to where you can cross them to a certain another area of the country. You should do that shit all the time. Because our release load was so big. We had so many releases. We couldn't go gung-ho with all releases. We had to have a strategy on how we were going to develop this record and how we were going to get this record to a certain point in so many weeks to where we could start pushing it nationally. But we had to do that because we had 18 to 20 releases, man. You can only push 3 to 4.
Yeah, that's crazy. And yeah. I agree with you, you know, totally, that this business is like an on-the-job training kind of thing. It's like, it would take years for you to train somebody how to do what you do,
yeah,
and have to pay them at the same time. Who does that?
I'll be truthful with it, man. And I say this in the book. When I first went to work for Stax, I had no clue what the fuck I was doing. I went to radio stations and giving a record. I mean, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But it took me about 4 to 5 years to kind of get knack of everything, of the different program directors, different areas, stuff. So after about 4 to 5 years in the business, you start feeling like you've got a grip of what you want to go on. And what I had done, I had did most of my development in the South, in Dallas and Houston and all those areas. And then I went to Chicago with CBS and then from Chicago to New York. So, you know, Chicago was my first challenge, but I love Chicago other than the weather. You know, they wasn't killing people every 5 seconds then.
Then, yeah.
You know, it was real open, not a nice clubs, nice restaurants, tons of artists, you know, I worked with Minnie Riperton, which I loved. And when I was in Chicago, worked with Bill Withers. Who was that? Somebody else. Patty. I love Patty LaBelle. Patty was a monster. Still is probably. Who else I worked with when I was in? George Duke, Herbie Hancock, Stanley Clarke. You know, we had a lot of great jazz acts. Johnny Taylor, Tyrone Davis. Tyrone used to be one of my favorites because he was ignorant. Yeah.
Why do you think there's so many people trying to get in this business that don't know this business?
Well, you know what? But the funny thing about it, Paul, and I'm sure you've known about this too, is that novice trying to be in this business, you can't tell them shit. I've had multitudes of artists that I'd recommend. This is what I feel like we need to do now, and this is what you need to do now. They won't do it.
Yeah.
They want to do it their way. And then later, they come back to me, well, I may should have done that. I said, I told you that. I got one artist here I'm not going to name, which is a talented motherfucker, okay? Very talented. Had two or three top 20 records, but just wouldn't take instructions and do what I asked them to do and follow the instructions that I told them. Now they're getting old. You know, once you get up in them 30s, baby, it's over. It's really over unless you got a monster record. And see, nowadays, internet, which is mostly 14 to 19 to 20 something, they don't want to hear nothing about you when you're 30, 40 years old. Unless you Snoop. Matter of fact, they don't even want to hear Snoop. Snoop got a different sound than the rappers now. You know, that Snoop stuff and Dre stuff and all that, that's my sound back when I was a kid. You know? Because Drake would have never happened back in the day.
No, you're right. He wasn't. He never would have been as big as he. Never would have happened. Not that back in that. Then he would not been that big.
When he was hitting with them slamming beats and all that. See, Drake has chords he plays. That's him. Yeah. Drake is a chord rapper. You know, so his style is totally different than what was happening prior with Tupac and Biggie and all those kind of people that had swag with their rap.
Dang. So, you think it's like everybody just thinks they could do it now or something? I mean, it's just too many people trying. Everybody can't be that talented.
No. Well, I mean, I don't, you know, what my wife used to always tell me, because I used to worry about this kind of stuff. She said, you'll never be broke because everybody always want to be a star.
Yeah. There's just too many people now trying to make it.
It probably is, but it's more to marry as far as I'm concerned. The more to try, that means.
No, yeah.
Fuck me and you.
COVID was good for me because nobody could spend any money on touring or anything of that nature. They had to spend it online or no promotion at all.
Absolutely. Digital. That's all they could do.
You know, I mean, and now
I really still miss getting out and beating those streets. You know, I mean, artists used to stand out and sing in front of the parking lot at Walmart, man. Matter of fact, I had an artist that we did that with. We got permission from the Walmart managers in about 4 to 5 cities. We set up in stores inside the cities and did a concert outside. We set up in stores inside the Walmart and did concerts outside the store on the parking lot. Sold a ton of records. Yeah. Did you remember that record, WAP?
WAP, yeah.
J-Dash, WAP. That record sold 3 million units.
That's good.
That was a hip hop record I worked on, boy. That's matter of fact, it's in my other room. The 2 platinums.
Do you think it's harder to get results nowadays working radio or back in your days? Because now everything's more digital. You're like servicing a record. And
radio's tougher now. Radio's tougher now because a lot of people don't have the freedom to do what they want to do. They have consultants. And then a lot of them owned by corporations. Matter of fact, it's like Cumulus. Cumulus has, I think, 22 stations or 20 stations. You got to get top 20 to get them to play it. Okay. Radio One, you got to get top 30. And then they say top 30, but trust me, you got to almost get top 10 for the motherfucker to play. You know, so it kills an art in the art. As a matter of fact, it is a portion in my book where I was talking about when I first left major labels and started working indie, okay? And when I first started working indie, see, because when I was at major label, I never gave nobody no money. You know, we hired indie to do something like that. But yeah. I had to go work indie. When I first went out on the road, I knew about payola, but I wasn't paying nobody no money to play my records. And thank God I had a decent enough reputation and relationship with these guys, man. I never spent a dime. I broke 5 or 6 big records. Never gave nobody a penny.
And payola, it don't always work either, does it?
Huh?
The payola don't always work for these cats either, does it?
Now, well, payola don't work because the record ain't real. Okay, because when you pay for something, you don't get with
yeah.
Something.
And that's probably why they're paying for it, right? Because the record ain't that good in the first place?
No, not everybody pay. Everybody pay. You may not think it, but trust me, Andy's on every record that is out. Okay? See, the only people I know that may not pay is Beyonce and a few people like that. But everybody trying to get that paid. Because there's indie working all of them. Matter of fact, even back in my, well, even now, they still indie's on records. But that's one of the reasons why they don't use radio as much as they used to, because it's so fucking expensive. To have a number one record nowadays, you're talking about $100,000.
Man.
Easy. Last top 5 record I worked, label spent $120,000.
Man.
A lot of fucking money, baby. They got a deal for $250,000, though.
But still, it's a lot of money.
It's still a lot of money, man. Yeah. And I've had artists, though, and acts and labels that they didn't give a fuck what it costs.
Yeah.
They want that number one. You know, and most of the people that are like that don't have the material. You know, they just think that they do, but they just don't have the material. And at a point, it just doesn't make sense to spend any more money. And I always advise my clients, I'm not one of these consultants or people that would just keep taking money from you. When I see it's just no route for this record, I suggest that we stop spending money.
And move to the next, and move to a new record. Yeah.
At least do something, but, you know, at a certain point, it becomes obvious that it's just not going to happen.
And there's a lot of those cats out there that just take the money. You know, it's like you were saying, we could give them the best advice. When they don't listen, we can't put a gun in their head. But we've done the honest thing of giving them the best advice possible.
I always tell my artists when I think it's time for them to quit, I think you're wasting money. You know, I had a client one time, man, when I first moved to Houston, spent $1 million with me. On one artist. I think he had 2 or 3 releases. I got him top 20.
Yeah.
But it cost a fortune to get him there, and the records weren't selling.
Selling.
Yeah. And I kept telling him, I said, man, I can get it there. You know, I said, but it's not showing any kind of indications that we got a record here. You know, he said, no, I want it. I want it. I want it. I said, okay.
And in that time, it becomes supply and demand.
Yeah, as long as he wanted it and they pay for it, I do what the client asked me to do. Yeah, but I always tell my clients the truth. It doesn't always work out for them. They don't want to hear the truth.
Yeah.
You know.
Nobody want to hear the truth no more.
No, nobody wants to hear the truth, man. I tell them, I said, nah. And a lot of records I just don't even take because I know they're going to end up being mad at me because they're going to blame me.
They're not going to get the results that they expect to get.
They call us up in for. And I don't care how much money you got, you cannot turn chicken shit into chicken salad. Okay?
What was that one again? Say that again.
You cannot turn chicken shit into chicken salad. It just don't work.
So where's this book going to be available at?
Hopefully next week.
Next week?
I have one more edit. I'm going to do that this Saturday. The book is already finished, okay? The thing that I've had to do, Paul, Just take a few stories out about people that don't want to be
in the book.
Of the ass. Huh?
There are people that don't want to be in the book.
No, they want to be in the book, but they don't want me to use their name.
Oh, they want you to refer to them like as a subliminal.
Yeah. So you're going to find a lot of that in there. And my first edition, when I first wrote the book, or when I first started, what I did was I bought one of these softwares where they record your notes and stuff. So I started talking into the software. I ended up with almost 200 pages of shit of memories. So we started wearing that down. We got down to 300 pages. Now I'm down to 250, I think. Because I had to remove some stories. I had to change some people's names. I had to change some dates. Because the first book, I named everybody. You know me. I named, for that first story, I told on, I didn't tell you, don't get nobody in no trouble. But I used everybody's real name.
Yeah.
Charday did this. Samso did this. Teddy Pendergrass did this. So-and-so. So first of all, my lawyer said, oh, T, so you asked him for a fucking suit. I said, but it's true. He said, it doesn't matter. If it's true, they're going to sue you just to sue you. You know, because Teddy still got relatives alive. His family's still living.
Yeah.
Luther still has his relatives. Charday is still finna do it, drop another album. So she's really, and that's what one of the ones I had a big problem with was Charday.
Yeah.
I worked with her a long time. Matter of fact, her project was tough to break. And so I got a lot of history with her. But you know, she's got a new project coming out. She hadn't been on the market in 12 years. She hadn't had a release in 12 years.
Man.
So she don't want no negative press on her whatsoever.
Okay.
I can't quote her.
Yeah.
I have plenty of quotes from
her. Yeah.
But I can't quote her. You know, and M. Toomey, Tina Marie, which you'll find out Tina Marie tried to sleep with me several times. When I work with her.
Oh man, drop my headphones on that one.
Yeah. She asked me to sleep with her several times, which I didn't, and which ruined our relationship. You'll read about it in the book though, but it ruined our relationship. You know
I'm gonna have to do a YouTube short on that one, right?
Yeah, once a woman asked you to sleep with her and you turn her down a couple of times, you know, you shit. Either you gay. Are you saying there's something wrong with her? That's the way women think, you know. And so she knew I wasn't gay, so she thought and said, well, what's wrong? Why won't you? It's going to fuck up my career. I might as well have slept with her. Oh, one second, man.
Okay.
Yeah, Joe, what's up? You know what, man? I'm in the middle of an interview. I haven't had a chance to check, but I will check. And I text you back, okay? Okay, take care.
Straight authentic interview.
Yeah. Yeah, so I might as well have, you know, because it caused repercussions.
Where's your book gonna be located at?
Everywhere.
Everywhere? You're gonna have physical copy and a digital copies?
Oh yeah. Ebook, Amazon.
Ebooks are what? Audiobooks, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's gonna be everywhere. It's gonna be. I've already got everything's done. Matter of fact, the book is put together. Everything's done. I just got to proofread it one more time to make sure that we didn't say the wrong thing about the wrong person. See, I got notes here. Matter of fact, right now in front of me, on what page, what it said, and what I want to make sure it's cool. You know, I got See, I had cocaine in there several times because cocaine was like coffee back in the 80s. Okay.
Yeah, everybody I've heard.
Doing cocaine. Cocaine. I did cocaine at the White House.
Yeah, I've done cocaine in my younger years before.
Yeah, I did. You know what? I tell anybody, cigarettes was harder to stop than cocaine.
Yeah, you know what? That's crazy. Like, we were like every 2 weeks with cocaine, but you're right. Like, cigarettes or weed or alcohol.
Cigarettes and weed, though, man. I still smoke weed, man. I ain't never smoke weed, but Cigarettes was my toughest thing to stop smoking. When I woke up to the cocaine, you know, when I started realizing that cocaine did not enhance my personality, give me more of an asshole than anything else. I feel like, you know, I got to leave this shit alone. Plus the fucking money.
Yeah, it was more expensive, yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, one of the favorite sayings back in the day was cocaine was your God's way of telling you you're making too much money.
I never heard that one.
That's right. Cocaine was God's way of saying you're making too much money. But everybody was doing cocaine back then, but nobody wants to be reminded of it. See, I know a lot of big people. I mean big. If I start naming some names of some people I did cocaine with back in the day, oh, man, you shut this shit. You say, shut the fuck up, shut up. So that's why so many people are afraid of me in this book.
Yeah.
So, and I spoil everybody. I'm going to tell on myself. Okay. But I'm not going to tell on nobody else. I take everything that I've done with anybody I've done with. I'm taking it to the grave. I'm just not the kind of kiss and tell person. If I was, boy, I'd make a fucking fortune. You know, because that's what everybody want me to do. Is
tell all, the T.C. Tompkins tell all book.
Tell all, man. I'm sorry. If that's what they're looking for in this book, they're going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Great stories in there. Two or three by Teddy Pendergrass, because that was my boy back in the day. Because Teddy was wild. Teddy was wild. Some great stories by Chardonnay, Tina Marie, Luther, M. Toomey. Let me see who else I got some good stories on in there. Plus, I got a lot of great stories by Tookie, which was Frank DeLeo, was my boss, and went to work for Michael. Got a lot of great stuff about Michael, because I got to be real cool with Michael before he passed.
He was my number one artist as a kid growing up. Michael Jackson was Jesus Christ to me.
Oh, man, he was the shit. Matter of fact, I mean, he used to call me all the time. He used to call me on all the holidays, wish my family Merry Christmas shit. Matter of fact, he used to call me to see if I needed any money. I saw him in the 90s, I think it was. Last time I saw him was in the 90s out in Los Angeles. And that's matter of fact, that's when he was going through all his suits and molestation and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
He told me right then it was about the money. He said, I'm going to have to pay some people off. And that's what he did. And later it came out that that's what the suits were about, was about the paper. You know, but he never impressed me as being. Matter of fact, I know a lot of the lot of women he was fucking. You know, so, I mean, if he was doing that, he was a versatile motherfucker. Because, I mean, he had women, man. When I went out there when he was a kid, he was fucking.
Now, does this book break down any differences of, like, does this book break down any differences of, like, the music business then to now?
It does tell it just a different, but really all it is, man, is we just been fucked. We just been conned.
Yeah.
That's all this is. They done conned all these music artists, man. I mean, this way of getting your music is very convenient. Streaming is convenient as shit.
$10 a month, unlimited music.
Yeah, and you can listen to endless amount of music, okay? But artists are being fucked, man. You know how many streams you got to get to make a dollar? That's ridiculous. You say, I mean, if you do 5 or 6 million streams, what is that? Maybe about, what, $30,000 or some shit?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Come on, man. That's ridiculous, man.
Meek Mills is on a label deal. He says he's only getting a dollar per every thousand.
Yeah, that's about right.
And the labels getting labels and distributors, I guess, are taking three.
Killing.
So they're getting what?
Record companies are happy as a punk in Boys Town.
They're keeping 75% of his money. He's getting 25%.
Streaming is the worst thing that ever happened to music artists.
How long do you think it'll last?
Man, as long as they keep doing everything digital, it's going to probably last forever.
Forever.
Unless they come out with another format of being able to get. People have got used to the convenience of it. You know, yeah. I mean, you don't have to have no records, no CDs. Ain't got to have no storage place. You know, it's easy.
Even for the DJs, it's easier. They don't got to carry all the crates and stuff like they used to.
All they got to have is a little flash drive and a damn Mac.
Oh, they don't even need a flash drive nowadays. You just need a laptop and a Serato, and the music's on the laptop already. You can just load it in and just bam.
There you go. Sure is. I don't like it. I really don't. I didn't even like downloads. But you know what, man? And I'll say this, especially with black music. I don't know if it's the same with pop, okay? But when I would work black music and go into a black neighborhood, you know, the record store, man, was the spot. The record store and the barbershop was the spot. You got the music playing. You got kids hanging out at the record store. You got the posters. You had an air of excitement in the community about the music. It's just not there anymore. It's everybody got their headphones on.
And there's no mom and pop stores no more.
No, that's dead, man. I still love that. And I talk about
I did that. Too.
Yeah. I talk about that greatly in the book, because back when I was kicking ass, they had tons of black one stops. You know, when I was up in the Midwest, there was Ernie's One Stop, there was Fletcher's, there was George's Music Room. Eddie Kendrick's brother had a big distributor in Detroit named Kendrick's One Stop. You know, I mean, it was a massive amount of participation by a lot more people than it is now that it's digital.
And we love the mom and pops because it was the only place for us to get our local CDs sold.
Absolutely.
We could do the consignment.
Get it played in store. Oh, I used to do all that shit. I love all that shit, man.
And it seemed like it was easier when you had that's the thing. Distribution had value then. Now it's, what do you say? It's chicken shit?
Chicken shit.
Because everybody can get distribution. You get unlimited distribution for like $14 a year on some of these platforms.
And you know what it is? It just doesn't have any value. Just like you said, you're paying for it real cheap because it don't have no value.
And anybody can record the music, distribute it, do their own covers. You know, they'll do some bullshit artwork, record the song in less than an hour. Throw it on a distribution and
it just really doesn't have any value anymore, man.
There's no process.
It's like sausage and a meat. Yeah, you know, when you make sausage at a meat plate, it's like sausage. Yeah.
Just a bunch of shit grinded up together.
That's it. It's just sausage. You know, I hate that, man. I love this industry. This industry has been just enormously good to me, you know, and I love the fact that I had to scratch and scrape to get there, you know, because I mean, nobody was handing out. You had to build a reputation and build a relationship with everybody that you were involved with that was involved with your music. That is gone, you know, that is gone. People had more of a personal stake and artists back then.
Yeah.
You know, because they were involved in it. And the stations were involved in it. It's just not that kind of involvement anymore. It's just all impersonal. Well, the whole world has become it. I think digital, the world going to digital has made everything impersonal.
Yeah, social media ain't so social because post something and everybody's like, oh, fuck your shit.
Yeah,
Who cares? Fuck you. Yeah. Like, social what?
Media, yeah, social media only deal right now with me is that most of my friends are all my age and we all retired music industry people. And I keep up with what they're doing. And that's what basically social media was meant for. But the young kids, man, all they do is take shots at each other.
Yeah.
And it is just, it has just generated a generation, man, that just, I don't know. I'm really concerned about it. I mean, even with my grandson, you know how hard I have to work to de-digitalize. You know what I mean? You know, keep that damn phone out of his face or the pad or something, you know, because he doesn't communicate. He got his face in that damn thing all the time.
I'll be saying that all the time. I make a living on the internet, and I don't have my face in the phone that as much as these people do, and they don't even do nothing with it but just consume content.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
They're looking worthless bullshit. And you know what the funny thing about it, they shit on TikTok and shit. China don't let them show that shit in China.
What do you mean?
They don't show the same type of bullshit on TikTok in China.
Oh yeah, yeah. China, yeah, they're not playing that. They don't want us, they don't want any influence from our culture. That's right. Influencing their culture whatsoever.
Yeah. They showing how to do math problems and shit on TikTok. They're teaching on TikTok.
That's crazy. I didn't know that one.
Oh yeah.
They more into the educational stuff. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, they're using it for instruction.
That makes sense, though. That makes all the sense in the world.
They got a little short video, kids' attention, they teach you how to do something, going to it's informative. It's not dances and jokes and bullshit like it is over here.
We'll get into the hour mark. Usually don't try to go over the hour. I got one more question I want to ask you, and I'm gonna let you just shout out whatever you want. Okay. Do you think you've worked one of the best jobs to ever work on this planet, promoting music for a living, man?
Man, in the time that I was hot, it was. From the 60s, late 60s, I got in the business in 71. From 71 to 89 and 90, I was real. Well, I'm still active. I would say up until the 2000s, I loved it. You know, matter of fact, the last big record that I broke that was before digital was Domino Ghetto Jam.
Oh man, we were talking about him recently.
Yeah, that was right before digital started taking over. It was just radio, okay? And it was in the 90s. And in the late 90s and early 2000s, it just started going downhill.
Right when around the mixtape game came in.
Yeah.
That's when a lot of stuff going digital. Even in the mixtape game, everybody tried to do like 50 Cent and, you know, blow up off mixtapes, not work. It was just the oversaturation of mixtapes.
I remember the mixtape thing, yeah, when everybody was doing it.
And nobody was really capitalizing except Wayne, maybe Meek Mills, 50 Cent, and a few other cats.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Well, look, I on my last shout out, like you say, hey, man, I have had a life that I couldn't have dreamed of. I really couldn't have dreamed of. Because I come from a rural part of the country. I come from East Texas and farm country. I used to work my ass off as a kid. My grandfather used to own a construction company. So I used to work with him on his construction company. But when I got old enough to get the fuck out of Dodge, that was the first thing I did. And God blessed me enough to get into this industry. I have met some of the biggest people in the world, some of the nicest people in the world, had great friendships. You know, I met your butt, me and you cool, you know? And I mean, it's just like meeting people like you, and you are proficient in what you do. You take what you do seriously.
Thank you.
You know, I take what I do seriously. I love meeting people that take pride in what the fuck they do. You know,
yeah,
I am very prideful, and I know pride is a sin, but I'm a prideful person.
Yeah,
I don't want to have any connection to anything that's booty. Okay, I want my shit to all be slammed. And any product that I represent, anybody that's listening to this can tell you, any product that I represent, I'm a pit bull on it. I go to the max. Matter of fact, I talk about one of my good friends in the book was Ruben Rodriguez.
Rest in peace. He just passed away not too long ago.
He just passed away recently. I loved Ruben because Ruben and I worked on the first Alicia Keys. We worked on the Nappy Roots, Arrested Development. I mean, see, man, I had some motherfuckers of acts I worked with. And Ruben, what I liked about Ruben would never give up on a fucking record, man. I mean, I'd have seen him work a record a year. You know, and he'd make it happen.
Now,
Ruben was behind Cardi B.
I didn't know that.
That's the guy that broke Cardi B, Ruben Rodriguez.
And I actually had somebody that was bringing me some his clients, like right before he passed away, man. A lot of his independent clients for like Spotify.
Yeah.
And then he just passed away like literally overnight, man.
Him and I was working on this girl. I think you helped me on this girl. Anna Lita X. She had a record called Wavy.
I remember her.
She worked with me on that record. But him and I worked on that record together, and he did a national conference call for me with Radio One. I love Kathy Hughes before I start talking about them motherfuckers. I love Kathy, and I've been knowing Kathy Hughes forever before she even started Radio One. But I just feel like conglomerates that own Clear Channel, Radio One, all of that stuff interferes too much in the music. Instead of, I don't mind a major corporation owning something, you know, they got to own something. But don't try to stick your fingers into everything, man. You know,
and they don't really care about the music, do they? They just care about the numbers.
Man, they care about the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, it's gotten so that they interfere in everything.
Yeah.
You know, they want to approve everything. And I'd be asking them, what the fuck do you know about blues and rock and roll and R&B? What do you know about that? What black church? Because I tell anybody, black rhythm, blues, rock and roll, R&B, all that shit came out of black church. So what do you know about a black church and gospel music?
I went to a Pentecostal church before, and it was like, oh man, I never seen so much love in my entire life.
Yeah.
All the elderly women come up, give you a hug, kiss on the cheek. Everybody coming up, shaking your hand. It was definitely way different. Cause I grew up in Baptist church, and they were just like so dull and bland. Seasoning over there. You go to a Pentecostal, and it's like
shouting. Oh yeah, they in it. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely a different element, man. Yeah. Definitely a different element. Anything you want to shout out though before we go?
And I just want everybody to remember the Booker's name.
When Radio Was King.
It should be out next week. I guarantee it's a good read. You got a lot of good stuff in there.
I'm gonna get me a copy. I promise. Yeah, promise.
A lot of the stuff that I did. Matter of fact, I ain't gonna tell you. There's some stuff in there you ain't gonna believe. Because I worked with Gene Griffin with the discovery of Teddy Riley. Teddy Riley his first contract, his first deal when he was 15 years old. So when I worked with Gene, I worked with one of the biggest heroin dealers in New York City, and that's what he was back in the day.
Well, that's always been an element in the music business, is dope dealers investing.
And I say that, you know, I say it even though it may not be as much now, I don't know, but back in the late 70s and 80s, man, drug dealers everywhere. That's how they was washing their money. Was through the music industry, you know. So it was just an element that was there.
And some of them probably actually believed in what they were investing into as well.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I mean, I know a lot of them wanted to get out of the business that they were in. Wanted to get clean money, you know, and they start off in the music industry. As a matter of fact, during the late 80s, after I left CBS, until I think maybe 2000 or late 90s, man, I worked for nothing but drug dealers. It was hiring me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was because I had worked for Gene or what, but man, I had a string of drug dealers that I worked for about maybe 8 years, 8 to 10 years, and they pay well.
And I think old boy said it best on The Wire, money doesn't have owners, it just has spenders.
That's it, baby. That's it. I love that. That was my favorite show, too.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you taking all your time to talk.
Appreciate you coming along, you know, bringing this knowledge, this wisdom, and these great, great stories, man.
Thanks, Paul. You have a blessed day, dog.
All right. You too. Peace.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope y'all enjoyed. That was T.C. Tompkins, When Radio Was King. He said the book's coming out next week. Should be available everywhere. Check all the bookstores, Amazon. I'm definitely going to get some links from him for the ad in the description and whatnot. But a lot of interesting stories. And as you see, we like to keep it authentic and real. You know, so I did let y'all know that, Yes, I did do coke once in my life or twice in my life before as well. Because this isn't the lying podcast. This is the authentic podcast. But once again, I want to thank y'all for tuning in. I hope y'all enjoyed. And I'm about to hit y'all with the outro.